Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by BarkBox, a monthly box of high-quality fun and healthy goodies for your dog, delivered right to your door. Save 20% when you sign up for a new subscription. Visit BarkBox.com/Twit and use the code TWIT at checkout. And by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is an easy and affordable way to help you learn. Instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on business, software, web development, graphics design, and more. For a free trial, visit lynda.com/knowhow. That's lynda.com/knowhow. On this episode of Know-How, we're going to be doing a little brain upgrade for Project Lunchbox, and then it's all about 3, 2, 1, super backup. Welcome to Know How. It's the Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Ballasser.
I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next 30 minutes, 45 minutes, something like that. I don't know. For the next number of minutes, we're going to be taking you through some of the projects that we've been working on so that you can fill your knowledge hole.
Yeah, fill it to the brim.
We gotta stop saying
that. Well, we've got the knowledge hole, and then we've got the know hole. The secret lair.
Nobody knows about this, but at some point we're going to take you downstairs to this little, what do we call it? A clubhouse? A lair?
Yeah,
a cave?
Like a speakeasy sort of thing?
Yeah, we've carved
speakeasy
it out.
Speakeasy of knowledge.
Speak knowledge. Knowledge. Nah. Knowledge. No.
So far, the catchiest name has been the know-hole.
The know-hole. Mm-hmm. It's a cool little area where we've been building some of the know-how projects. We now have a place to do it inside the building.
That's our excuse.
The know-hole itself is actually kind of a cool project.
I have a feeling that you're a nester. You like to build up little systems and
then
stuff
leave.
Like that.
Yeah, that's what I do. Oh, but it's fun because it's kind of like a man cave. We basically built a man cave where we can get some work done.
We did the essentials first. We set up the Xbox.
Right.
We set up the gaming PC.
That's right. We got it all networked. We got the power in there. Got the beanbags.
We have a shelf for projects.
We have a place where we're supposed to build stuff, which we haven't actually built anything in yet.
Well, you got to get the base down and then feel relaxed while you're there. Yeah.
Right. Well, let's get right into the show. The first bit today is a little bit about something that is near and dear to our hearts, and that's giving Project Lunchbox some brains. Did you read about this at all?
I did. So this would be a way of automating the lunchbox.
Yeah. So some very innovative folks have taken Arduino. And Arduino is an open source project.
It's a little board.
Yeah, it's a tiny little board.
Microcontroller.
It's a microcontroller that can do so many things. Yes. And Arduino, along with Raspberry, kind of kicked off the whole craze of why use a PC to do something when you're only using a fraction of the power when you could take something like an Arduino or something like a Raspberry Pi and custom build something for a particular application.
Yes, and this application would be using GPS and giving AI capabilities to a lunchbox or any other kind of device.
It was a company by the name of 3D Robotics, and I think Josh has some links that he could throw in here. And they've been making a multi-platform autopilot for everything from planes to boats and automobiles. Now, they actually came into prominence when they built the APM and the Pixhawk. They were autopilot boards that actually won a competition for building a UAV in 2012, what they called it the Outback Challenge.
That's cool.
They've now taken the same technology and they've given you the ability to build it into a remote control model, any model that has standard servos. Now, for example, our Project Lunchbox, and again, this is the reason why we chose a lunchbox, because we wanted a big platform, right?
Yes.
We wanted the ability to squeeze a lot of stuff in. A lot of the smaller buggies can't do this.
There's a lot of empty space in there.
Yeah, go to the project, the overhead shot, Josh. What you can see is all this empty space is where we're gonna be building up projects in the future. The APM would go between all of the like the ESC, the electronic servo, the motor control, the steering servo, And it allows you to program in a course that the vehicle will follow via GPS. Or, my personal favorite, you can pilot a course with a remote control because the receiver actually plugs into the APM.
Right.
And then it will replay the course.
That's cool.
It's actually pretty cool. It's good technology.
The first thing I thought of using this for, though, was to, like, go fetch me things, you know? So, like, it would drive to go get me a sandwich and then bring it back or something like that.
Little note, here's the money, yeah. Give me my sandwich.
Just drop the sandwich into the lunchbox.
That's, you know, sadly, I probably would do that. If you built that, I would use it. Now, the other cool thing about this this whole design is that they're using off-the-shelf components. So if you go to their website, and go, Josh, go ahead and go back there, they'll show you how they built the project. And one of my personal favorite parts is they've got a section where you can build in infrared sensors for obstacle avoidance.
Ah.
So it's not just going to dumbly follow the GPS track. It's going to look around itself and say, well, I can't drive over that. I can't drive over that. So I'm going to take an avoidance path.
Very cool.
This is exactly the kind of thing that I was trying to do with a Raspberry Pi. I could never get the Raspberry Pi to have enough processing power to do what I wanted to do. But that's, again, because it was running Linux underneath. This is a dedicated processor. I think this has a lot of promise.
Yeah. Well, sounds like it's time to start making our own Google autonomous vehicle, you know, like they have.
Except, you know, 1/12 scale.
Oh, yeah. Well, as long as it brings me back sandwiches.
Speaking of sandwiches, you know, what if you could get a sandwich for your best friend?
For my buddy? My buddy Tibbs?
Tibbs, that's right. And thankfully, we can do it now because we've got a brand new sponsor on KnowHow. That's right, folks. It's BarkBox. Have you ever wanted to get a little something special for that best friend? Well, that's what BarkBox lets you do. BarkBox is, in a phrase, it's happiness in a box for that special pet that you've got. BarkBox is a multi-subscription box of high-quality, fun, and healthy treats, toys, and goodies for your dog. Each BarkBox contains 4 to 6 awesome full-size products. Everything from innovative toys like,
lobster.
Rock lobster,
hey.
to nice treats that are not just good, but good for your dog. Your dog deserves the best. All treats are sourced from the U.S. and Canada. Chews are made in the United States, Canada, South America, Australia, and New Zealand. BarkBox edible products do not include rawhide, which is awesome because the first time I heard that rawhide had formaldehyde, a chemical I would want nowhere near me, I thought, well, why am I giving this to my dog? Why am I giving this to my bud? Why am I giving this to Terbs?
My best friend.
BarkBox edible products also do not include glycerin, wheat, gluten, soy, corn, or fillers, which is important if your dog is on a limited diet. So rest assured, everything is paw tested by their office pups, and your dogs will love it. I love that. I that's the job I want. Oversee some dogs.
Very punny.
Here's how it works. Go to BarkBox.com/twit and select Get Started. Then select the size of your dog and choose between 4 different subscription plans. And we've got a special offer for fans of Twit. You can save 20% off when you sign up for a new subscription at BarkBox.com/Twit and use the code Twit at checkout. BarkBox also gives 10% of their revenue to local rescues and shelters across the United States and Canada, so your subscription will also help dogs in need. That's BarkBox.com/Twit. And we thank BarkBox for their support of KnowHow. You know what else is hard to resist?
What?
Good backup.
Good backup. What about super backup?
How about super? Okay, we'll
super
do some super backup. Super duper backup.
This isn't just your regular backup.
No. This goes a little extra mile. Now, we talked a little bit about this in episodes past when we talked about 3-2-1.
Right.
We talked about how, okay, this is what it means to have 3 different copies of a single file in 2 different types of media with at least one of them being offsite.
Right.
Right. That's sort of the ideal. That's what you want out of your backup solution because it makes sure that you will always have a copy of your file when you need it.
Right, and different iterations of it.
Right. Well, what's made this slightly confusing is the fact that cloud storage has become incredibly popular.
Yes, Dropbox, Google Drive, OneDrive, formerly known as SkyDrive.
Yeah, and everyone's got a product that allows you to store things in the cloud. And unfortunately, I've got a lot of people, some of whom count on me for their IT support, who say, well, I've got a copy in the cloud, I've got a copy in the Dropbox, so I don't need to make backups, right? I don't need that offsite because it is offsite.
And then, it got deleted on one of my linked computers.
Yeah,
and everything else is gone.
There's a lot of things wrong with cloud storage as a backup. The biggest thing would be what we call sync poisoning.
Right.
Because we saw this. There was actually a famous case that involved a writer who was allowed his son to play with an iPad. The iPad got owned. The attackers actually deleted the files off the iPad.
They remote,
repeated the sync across all the devices. So he saw the files disappear from his iPad, then from his MacBook, then from his desktop.
And as he ran to the desktop,
right, trying to unplug it. He's like, "No,
come back!" Disappear, yeah.
That's what we call sync poisoning. And the problem with that is if you have an issue with one of the sync points, it's going to synchronize across all the others. If you have a corrupted file, it doesn't matter. The sync only knows, oh, that's more recent, so therefore I'm going to copy it across everything.
Right.
That can be an issue. There's also a problem in that there's no long-term versioning. Mm-hmm. Right? So, for example, if I'm working on a dissertation, let's say, but this could be any data, and I want to be able to step back in time to give a previous version of the document. Let's say I really screwed something up. Let's say if I wanted to remember how I had written it previously. A sync doesn't do that. A sync's going to keep the most recent version.
Right.
And that's also an issue, right? And then there's cost. Now, cloud storage is very inexpensive. In fact, the price of storage is going down to zero. Yeah. But when you start looking at some of the traditional cloud storage platforms, things like OneDrive, things like Dropbox, mm-hmm. they can be a little expensive. Now, Dropbox did yesterday just drop their price so that $99 or $9.99 a month, you can now have 1 terabyte of storage. But this is sort of the storage wars. All of the providers are going to be dropping their prices.
Right.
And it does get a little pricey if you're going to be storing, 2 terabytes worth of data up in the cloud.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, I'm a basic user, I guess, is what it would be for Dropbox. So I just have the free 5 gigs that they allotted me. I mean, I don't think I need a terabyte to pay $100 a month for that.
Which is good. So let's talk a little bit about this. Let's talk about how you could set up your perfect 3-2-1 backup, your super backup. We're looking for a few things in a super backup. First, we want a solution that's inexpensive to buy.
Right.
Second, we want a solution that's inexpensive to run. You know, it does me no good if it's going to cost me $40 in electricity and $20 worth of monthly fees to have everything backed up. Right? I need something that is relatively inexpensive so that I don't have to constantly be thinking, can I ditch the backup? It's costing too much.
Right. I mean, that's where the $99 for Dropbox might not be too bad. If you're using like your desktop PC that uses 300 watts or something constantly, then your electric bill is going to make up
precisely,
for that.
Precisely. We also want a solution that doesn't slow down my network experience, right? I don't want to have something that's installed on my computer or on my NAS boxes.
That's using up resources.
That's going to use up resources because that's just silly. That's just a way to constantly slow everything down. I want to keep as much speed as possible. I also want a solution that gets away from sync poisoning and a solution that's going to deal with revisioning.
Okay, so we're talking about a simple way and a low-cost way to keep all your cloud data backed up.
Right, but most importantly, I want something that requires no user intervention. Once I create it, mm-hmm. once I set it in motion, I want it to back up everything for all time.
Cool. So we've got some of the pieces to that puzzle right here.
Yeah. So, okay, this is a typical setup that I might be running. I got these two NAS drives. This is an iOSafe N2, and this is a Synology 713 Plus. Now, oddly enough, this is essentially this.
Right, but this is like the indestructible version?
It's the armored version, right. So okay. iOSafe partnered with Synology and put the technology for the Synology disk station inside of this armor. This can survive something like 30 minutes in a 4,300-degree fire.
Pool, run over by a tractor.
Exactly. Yeah, we've tested these extensively on Before You Buy. You could see all the reviews there to show how indestructible they are. The first part of my backup solution is I have these two synced. Mm-hmm. So this one actually sits near my desk. This one's in the basement somewhere, but they're both connected to the network.
Okay.
And the nice thing is the software is built into Synology, and Synology is crazy, crazy fast. It's quite possibly my favorite NAS at the moment just because of price and performance, but also because of the reliability. This has the option built in to automatically sync every single byte of information between this array and this array.
Okay.
Right. So that happens in real time, and the nice thing is even though it's still on-premise, this almost acts like an off-premise backup because it's so hardy. It's so difficult to kill.
Right, right. So you don't have to worry about it.
Right, right. So that's the first part of my backup solution. But that's not the big part. The big part is, well, I use a lot of cloud storage. I use G Drive. I use Dropbox. I use OneDrive. And I actually have, I have it set up so that I have a little bit different, something else on every one of them, right?
Right. And you want to tie all those together and back them up.
Somewhere. I want to tie them all together and I want to back them up. I want to make sure that they are all immune to sync poisoning or immune to bad revisioning.
So in like a time machine kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So if something happens to the sync and I lose everything, I want to still have a copy that is not vulnerable to the sync.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
Now, to make this all work, I went ahead and I bought this. If you go to the overhead shot, this is a an Acer netbook. You may remember these. These were really popular a couple of years back.
Yeah, Atom processor. Giga RAM, probably.
Yeah, not so fast, but I was able to buy this one on eBay for about $35.
Right, and you've got it running Windows 7.
Right, this is running Windows 7 Professional when I got it. So it's nice because it means I can use RDP, Remote Desktop Protocol. We talked about that a couple of episodes ago. But also because of this, if you look at the overhead again, this is how much power it's using. Now, it is really priming. I've given a couple of tasks, so it's just cranking out. And at cranking out, it's using 10 watts. The idle is closer to 5 or 6 watts.
Wow, so like less than most light bulbs.
Yeah, yeah. So this, you know, this is going to be nice and fuel efficient.
Yeah.
But what it's what I've done with this. What I've done, and if you go ahead and go over to my desktop for a second, I'm going to show you a little something. I've used Remote Desktop Protocol, which we talked about in a previous episode.
RDP.
To set up a way for me to easily get in. And I've installed Fast Glacier on this desktop.
So we talked about Glacier a few episodes ago.
Right. Fast Glacier allows me to connect to an Amazon Glacier account. Mm-hmm. Now what I'm also doing is I've also mapped all of my drives to it. So my NAS is mapped to this. All of my my cloud syncing storage is also on this computer. So it all comes into one box.
Okay.
All right? And then what I've done is I've gone ahead and I've set up a system by which everything that's on this box, so my cloud storage, my NAS drives, can automatically be backed up to Amazon Glacier.
Ah, yeah. Very cool.
So, hey, Josh, if you're not too busy, let's go ahead and see how you make your 3-2-1 super backup.
The first step is to create a folder on your backup PC that will become the repository of all your cloud storage services. Now we need to install the clients for our cloud storage services of our choice. In our demonstration, we'll be using Dropbox and OneDrive. Download and install the clients for your selected cloud storage services, and make sure to configure the clients to store their data inside the folder you just created. We want all of the sync folders within one subfolder to make backup a little less complicated. Now we need to map our network-attached storage box to the drive on the PC. Make sure that you've enabled reconnection at startup so that the drive will still be mapped after a reboot. You can continue adding cloud storage clients and network-attached storage devices, as many as you need, but for this demonstration, we're only using the two cloud storage clients and a single NAS mount. Once your cloud storage clients have completed their sync, it's time to configure Amazon Glacier and Fast Glacier. Logging into your AWS control panel, create a new vault that will contain your super backup. This is where all the various drives and folders will be backed up to once the backup system is running. After getting your security credentials for the new vault, open Fast Glacier, give your backup account a name, in our case we called it Cranky Backup, then input the access key ID and secret access key that you obtained from AWS. Select the vault you created in AWS and add as many folders as you'll need to back up your data. In our example, we're only backing up the cloud storage and the NAS, so we only need two folders. But you can customize the backup to suit your needs. Now, we need to learn the command line for Fast Glacier. The Fast Glacier command line is exceptionally powerful and flexible, much faster than the GUI, but it requires you to follow its command structure. To invoke the Fast Glacier command line, you need to type Glacier-sync, then the name of the account you made in Fast Glacier, then the name of the local directory or drive you want to backup, then the region code of the AWS server you'll be uploading to, then the name of the vault you've created in AWS Glacier, then the backup parameters. There are 6 backup parameters that you can enable. N will upload files that are new to a backup directory. C will upload files that are changed in the backup directory. D will delete files from the Glacier Vault that are deleted from the local directory. K will keep older versions of uploaded files. H will use file hashes to verify an uncorrupted upload of a file. And S will start synchronization without waiting for a command prompt. In our demo, we want to enable all these options, so I would type glacier-sync space cranky underscore backup space C slash cloud storage space US-west-2 space cranky underscore backup slash cloud backup space NCDKHS. You can customize your command line to suit. For example, if you want to keep all revisions of a file, remove the delete command, and Fast Glacier will not remove deleted files from the AWS vault, giving you a time machine for your data. You can test your command lines in a DOS prompt to make sure that they'll work. Just make sure that you've navigated to the Fast Glacier folder. Once you've confirmed that your command line sequences will do what you want them to do, it's time to generate scripts that will automatically sync your backup as needed. Open Windows Task Scheduler. Now select Create Basic Task. Give the task a name you'll remember and a description, then click Next. Choose how often you want the sync to take place, daily, weekly, monthly, or on a specific event, then click Next. When it comes to time, I suggest having the task sync when the network is at its least utilization. Make the selection, then click Next. When you get to the action setting, select Start a Program and click Next. In the Program/Script field, click Browse, then navigate to glacier-sync.exe in the Fast Glacier directory. In the Add Arguments field, add everything from your command line string after Fast Glacier, then click Next. Verify your settings and click Finish. Repeat the process for as many drives and folders that you want to sync. Once you're done, you can find your newly created task under Active Tasks. This is also where you go if you want to delete your tasks. That's it. The PC will now automatically back up the folders and drives you selected at the frequency and time you specified with the options you enabled. Your super backup is ready to run.
Now, the reason why I like to go with this solution over another one is because it gives you flexibility. If I install a client onto my NAS, maybe it means I can back it up to Carbonite, or maybe it means I can hack my way into backing up to Glacier. But in using a dedicated PC, a low-cost PC, one that it actually has a very small SSD in it, so it's not going to break really easily, but it gives me the flexibility to back it up to Dropbox, back it up to Glacier, back it up to Carbonite. I can basically pick any service I want and make that my backup. And it also means that I have the flexibility to pull in data from whatever sources I want. Do I want it to sync up my laptop? Do I want it to pull data off my desktop? That's why I like the super backup.
Yeah, I like the idea too that you can just remote into it when you need to. And you're not taking up resources on a machine that you use on a daily basis.
Right. So. Now, I will say this because I installed one of these in a Jesuit house on the East Coast. And it was running really well, and then they started complaining to me. They said, well, you know, the backups aren't being updated properly, and we don't see all in Glacier. And so I remote in. I find out that somebody had figured out, hey, there's a computer sitting in the closet, and he loaded up a BitTorrent client on it. So I'm like, well, yeah, you can't do that. So don't load any this is already a really low-powered PC. Don't put anything else on it because it's going to be chugging away with the backup.
It was too bad you didn't have, like, an IO safe for just the little laptop to put inside.
Lock it in. Say, no, you're not getting in here. Get away. I think what I learned is don't give them the passwords next time. This is a magic box. Just make sure it stays on.
Good idea.
So if you've got a super backup that you really like, how about this? Get into our G Plus group. Just go to Google Plus and search for Know How and tell us what you use for your 3-2-1 super backup. This is an example of something that I've developed over the years that has worked very well for me, but I know there's a lot of geeks out there who have the perfect way to keep all their backups up to date. And hopefully you'll share it with us.
Or you might be like Josh, and he says that it's basically when if a hard drive fails, what is it?
It's like a forest fire. Yeah. You know, tragedies happen sometimes. You get rid of all the garbage.
It's a way of cleansing.
Yeah, you know, you might lose everything. You might lose some stuff you really want, but that's what happens in tragedies.
So either back everything up or act like Josh and just say that hard drive crashes are part of the great circle of life.
I'm imagining a Smokey the Bear-like character saying, only you can prevent hard drive failure.
If it was only in one place, you didn't really want it, did you?
Yeah, all those family pictures that you had.
Please.
Forget it.
Yeah, no thanks. Now, speaking of saving memories and gaining knowledge over time, mm-hmm. we're glad that we have another sponsor of Know How that helps us to do that. What do? They fill...
The knowledge hole. Yes, they do. The ever-expanding knowledge hole.
Of course, we're talking about Lynda.com. Lynda.com is the place you want to go when you need to find something online. And it doesn't have to be about technology. Lynda.com is filled with courses about business and skill development. And you know, everything from computer technology to photography to things that you might want to do for your hobby. That's the wonderful thing about Lynda.com, which is it's just about knowledge. Now, Lynda.com is an easy and affordable way to help you learn. You can instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on software, web development, graphic design, and more. Lynda.com works directly with industry experts and software companies to provide timely training, often the same day, new versions of or releases of the popular software and suites that hit the market. So you're always up to speed. All courses are produced at the highest quality, not like the homemade videos on YouTube, which we love, but sometimes you want the good sound. Sometimes you want the good lighting. The courses are broken into bite-sized pieces, so you can learn at your own pace and learn from start to finish, or just find a quick answer when you need reference. Tools include searchable transcripts, playlists, and certificates of course completion, which you can publish to your LinkedIn profile, which is great if you're a professional in the field and you want people to understand, to see, to know what you've learned. Whether you're a beginner or advanced, Lynda.com has courses for all experience levels. You get to learn while you're on the go with Lynda.com apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android. One low monthly price of $25 gives you unlimited access to over 100,000 video tutorials. Now, premium members with an annual plan can download courses to their iPhones, iPads, or Androids and watch them offline. And premium plan members can also download project files, which lets you practice alongside the instructor with the exact same assets. Lynda.com also has courses on getting up and running with Arduino, Foundations of Programming Fundamentals, and the Raspberry Pi, which means that if you want to do something like add brains to your lunchbox, Lynda.com is the place to go.
Brains.
For any software you rely on, Lynda.com can help you stay current with all software updates and learn the ins and outs to be more efficient and more productive. So here's what we want you to do. We've got a special offer for you to try Lynda. All access to all courses free for 7 days. Visit lynda.com/knowhow to try lynda.com free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/knowhow. And we thank Lynda for their support of Knowhow. Boom.
Boom.
All right. Now, we know that we've kind of neglected the Google Groups for a while. We haven't pulled any segments from them. So we want to make it up for you.
Yeah.
We promised that we would be bringing in something every episode or every other episode. I think it's been like 2 months since we've done it.
We make a lot of promises.
I know, we do. But there are a few things that were in the group that I think we should talk about, that we, mm-hmm. we can talk about. The first one came from a couple of people who wanted to know where they could get the parts list for Project Lunchbox.
Right. Well, for the Lunchbox itself, we get that off of Amazon?
We got it off of Amazon, but you know, there are a couple of related pieces that we got along with this. For example, this is the kit. And the kit, you know, if you buy the kit, you're going to get the electronic speed control, you're going to get everything that you need to put into the chassis.
Dirt not included.
You will get the dirt that Brian managed to really cake into this thing. But for example, we put ball bearings into this kit.
Right, so that was a little bit of an upgrade.
Right, so if you look at, and we're going to put this into the show notes, if you look at the the basic kit. This was this kit from Amazon.com, about $115. It's going to cost. It's going to include the 540 motor. It's going to include the electronic speed control, and it's going to include everything you get. You need to get the kit on wheels.
Right.
But we've added a ball bearing set, which is going to cost you about $15 or so. Now the ball bearing set, as we showed you during the build,
worth it.
It totally worth it. Really decreases the amount of rolling friction, and it just makes things last longer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if this is a kit that you want to hold on for a while, you'll probably want to get that.
It's worth the upgrade.
We also got a Futaba two-channel transmitter. Right. This is about as cheap as you can go. We spared every expense to get this thing.
What, how much is that then?
This was $44.
Oh, okay. I mean, it works pretty well, though.
It works pretty well. There are far more advanced models. But, I mean, if you wanted to save money,
Get
the basic one. Then we also needed to get batteries, because this gives you the rolling chassis. It gives you the control, but it gives you no way to actually power it, which is why
that wouldn't be any fun then.
We bought two of these. These are 7.2 3800 milliamp hour batteries, which are nice.
Yeah.
We got a set of them, and we also got this Tenergy quick charger,
right?
Which is dual mode, so I can either charge it quick or fast, depending on
quick or fast.
Yes, quick. Quick charger. Okay. No, quick or trickle charge. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Because sometimes you want your batteries to charge quickly so you can run again, but that's not the best way to charge it.
That'll kind of deteriorate the life of the battery.
Yeah. Now, this charger is nice because it's got a thermal probe, so it can actually figure out when the battery is getting too hot. But that whole set, so the two batteries and the charger, cost about $60.
And when I was using the battery, I'd say it's about a good 20, 25 minutes of just continuous running.
Right. Now, that gives our total Project Lunchbox price at $234.
Okay.
That's a little bit more than some people are willing to pay. So we're going to give you the cheaper way to do something like a Project Lunchbox. And the first part is, don't get a lunchbox. You actually want to get a Tamiya Grasshopper. It's the same company, and believe it or not, it's the exact same transmission. It's a different chassis. But if you wanted to build the transmission from the lunchbox, this has the exact same assembly.
So you're saving about $30?
Yeah, it's a slightly smaller motor, but it's also easier to drive because it's not this monster truck.
Bouncy.
It's not so bouncy. It'll stay lower to the ground. Mm-hmm. It's a little less expensive to build, but it has all the same steps.
Okay.
Well, right?
Yeah.
So that's not bad.
Good entry level.
You just have to get the same radio. I searched, and apart from getting something used or from eBay, I can't find something lower than this two-channel Futaba radio.
I mean, I thought it was fine, but then again, I don't have a lot of experience using other controllers.
Right, No, it works just fine. But, I can't get anything lower than $44. Okay. Now, instead of the two 7.2 3800 milliamp hour batteries and the quick charger, you could get a 7.2 1500 milliamp hour NiCad battery. So it's less than half. It's like a third of the power that you're going to get from one of the more advanced packs, but it's $1,194, and then tie that together with a trickle charger, which will cost you about $7, and that means that you can get the total kit price down to about $157.
That's more doable,
especially
if you're just trying to get into it and see if you like RC cars.
And the nice thing about that is, I mean, if you decide later on that, I do want to put ball bearings, you can go back and disassemble the kit, put the ball bearings back in. If you decide, I want to get the more advanced batteries, those are easy enough to buy. Mm-hmm. But if you want to start off, about $160 is a really good sort of low water measure. It's going to cost you $160 to get started. And then I guarantee you, you're going to want to do more.
It's fun. I really enjoy it. I've had a lot of fun playing with this. I'm looking forward to doing other upgrades like the oil-filled shocks. Well, we've got to paint it, but I think I have to I have to clean it first.
Yeah, we're going to go with shocks. There's a couple of modifications that will work either for the lunchbox or the grasshopper that we're going to do to the suspension. And we're also going to be doing things like automating it.
Yes,
which will also work with the grasshopper.
I want to put a GoPro in it, too, and record from inside the cockpit or the chassis or whatever, but also stream to your phone or something and hook it up to the controller, so it's like you're driving inside the car.
And again, the grasshopper will use this same transmission unit. They're actually interchangeable. Very just, cool. Just as a smaller motor. So that's Project
Grasshopper. Too. Like, I'm surprised at how fast the Lunchbox is.
Well, because most people, when they think of remote control cars, they think of those ready-to-run little toy units that they buy, you know, they get kids get for Christmas or their birthday.
These are a little bit more serious.
These are serious. I mean, if you put the hammer down on this thing, it will take off.
Yeah. I mean, it's got enough torque that it does little wheelies every time, you know. If you, like, reverse it back a little bit and then...
And that's what it's for. You can't do that with a Grasshopper, by the way, which is, again, what's one of the reasons why I chose this.
I do like
this has a bigger engine because it's a bigger vehicle, and if you put this engine in a Grasshopper, you'll probably just strip it again.
So, do some burnouts.
They'll do that, yeah. All right, other questions from the G Plus group. We actually had a really good question from Michael Zimmerman, who wanted a way to share multiple cameras on his land. Now, we talked about this back in episode 101 when we talked about port forwarding, right?
Mm-hmm. And how you could have almost unlimited devices on...
Right. Yeah. You've got 65,500... 65,400 and some, 416 ports to play with. Mm-hmm. So why not use those? I mean, you could attach as many devices as you needed and just assign that particular port to that device. So when someone hits your outside address with that port assigner, they could get to that particular device inside your network.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Now, he liked it, but he had a question. He said, wait a minute, you know, I want to do this, but I want to make it easier to do because I don't have, like, a website to go to, or I probably have an IP address that changes every time the cable modem restarts.
Right.
And if I want consistent access to my devices, what am I going to do?
So you're going to need a dynamic DNS?
Absolutely. Michael Zimmerman, he had the answer. He's like, should I use a dynamic DNS? Yes, you should. Super easy to use. Now, let me explain what a dynamic DNS does.
Please.
If I go to twit.tv,
yes,
I send out a request to a DNS, a domain name service, a server system, that says, I want to go to twit.tv, what's the address?
And then it links you to it.
And it will say 45 dot blah, 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 dot, da, 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 and then your browser will connect to twit.tv, right?
Okay, yeah.
Because that's what it actually uses. It only understands the numbers. Well, a dynamic DNS is the same thing as the standard DNS system, except... They will allow for almost infinite number of names, depending on how much you pay.
Oh, okay.
So, in other words, let's say I have a cable modem. Well, my cable modem switches IP addresses. I can't use a standard domain because if my IP address changes...
It's going to not be able to find it.
It won't find it, right. Because it'll say, oh, you want to go to Padre.com. Padre.com is at 45.1.1.1, but since I reset, my address is now 41.1.1.2.
But you can use a dynamic DNS that doesn't have a number that changes?
Well, the number changes, but the dynamic DNS server automatically tracks what it's changed to.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so what you want is you want to use a service that that has hooks into your router. Let me show you how this works. Go ahead and switch over to my computer right now. This is the know-how router, which, again, we've given everyone the WAN. That's okay because we change that every time. The dynamic DNS system right here, this allows us – go ahead and zoom in on this, Josh. This allows us to choose a particular provider of our dynamic DNS. So Dyn.dns, which is my personal preference. I like them. Free DNS, no IP. These are all services that the router will work with to update your IP every time you change.
Okay.
Right? So if I rent a domain from them, say Padre.com, it will automatically know what my IP address has changed to, so it will follow me, and I'll be able to access my devices.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I should say that there is a slight difference between some of the different services. For example, Dyn DNS, which I like. I use them because they're incredibly reliable. Mm-hmm. Their lowest price plan is about $25 per year. That will get you 30 host names, so 30 different devices you can access.
Okay.
And $35 per year if you want to be able to host a server on your network.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right. There's also people like NoIP because it's free. You can get free access to three different host names, but then they start charging you if you want more capabilities.
I see.
I prefer to like Dyn DNS a bit more just because in my experience they stay up.
It's more reliable.
Yeah, NoIP can go down quite a bit, and
the price doesn't seem too outrageous.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's you know, again, it's a good thing to play with. Go ahead and try out a dynamic DNS name.
See if it works for you.
See if it works for you and if you like it.
Cool. Right. Yeah, because last night I was actually playing with my router trying to port forward for the 360. and I was playing with the DNS settings. So 8.8.8.8 now.
There you go. Yeah. So. All right. Now we've got another question. This one's from Nick S., who says he's having trouble with his wireless system. Go ahead and go to the link there. That should take you straight into the Google group. Nick S. has been saying, look, he's used the Wi-Fi analyzer that came on Android. That's something that we suggested because it's a free tool.
I use that all the time.
Right, and he has verified that there are no overlapping channels, but he's still having performance issues, and he wants me to recommend a Wi-Fi analysis tool. Well, that's actually a good one. Okay. We covered this back in episode 76, in January of this year.
So a little while ago.
Yeah, but it's important enough that I think we can give a little refresher.
Absolutely.
All right, so after this, go ahead and watch episode 76 to get the full Wi-Fi lowdown. I actually give you some tips and tricks on optimizing your Wi-Fi networks. But I always use this. These are tools from MetaGeek called the Wi-Spy with Channelizer. This is the 2.4 gigahertz only version, so this only has a radio for 802.11b, g, n in the 2.4 gigahertz range.
Right.
This does both 5 and 2.4, but it's a lot more expensive. Now, what these do, Josh, go ahead and switch over to my computer really quickly here. What these do is they allow you to see what's actually going on in your Wi-Fi environment. What Nick has said is he's checked to see that there's no overlap between the channels, because we talked about this. There are only three channels in the 2.4 gigahertz range.
Right. Like, it shows that you can pick different channels, but really there's only
three, right? There's one, there's six, and there's 11. Everything else overlaps and causes major problems. We can see here in the Twit Brick House, we've got those three channels. They're pretty well covered, right? So there's a lot of RF energy that's happening in those three channels. That's okay. That's normal. But what this lets you do is it lets you see these little spikes in between channels. It lets you see any 2.4 gigahertz interference that might be interfering with the RF energy of your Wi-Fi devices. I'm betting if Nick got one of these and turned it on, he'd be able to find huge spikes somewhere in these bands. And every time you see a spike that does not look like this nice, neat curve, it normally means something like a baby monitor or like a remote control for a drone, because those also operate in 2.4 gigahertz, but they're not Wi-Fi. And essentially, they're signal jammers.
Oh, wow. Okay. Right? So if he uses this tool and is able to find one of those spikes, then how is he going to narrow it down?
Right. You can actually combine. This is my favorite part. You can combine this. And I've got a video that I showed, I believe is also episode 76. If you combine this with a directional antenna, so it only takes RF from one direction, you can actually DF to find that particular. Oh, there it is, because it's got the strongest signal.
Okay.
And it's a really good way to figure out devices that are emitting RF that you didn't think were emitting RF.
Hmm. Yeah. So throw out those baby monitors.
Yeah. If you did not want to go there, because this is kind of expensive, the 2.4 gigahertz one is going to cost you $200. The 5 gigahertz one can cost you upwards of $1,500.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's cutting into my lunchbox budget.
Right. You could actually get something like a software-defined radio, which we're going to be showing off in a few weeks here on Know How, which can show you RF energy from everything.
Right.
And that's a nice, cheap, it's like a $20 device with some free software that it's not as easy to use, but once you understand what you're looking at, it can do the same job.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So that's Wi-Fi. That's fixing your Wi-Fi.
Just a little Wi-Fi analysis.
Wi-Fi.
The Wi-Fis.
Now, the last question we had is from Eric Harrison. I really wanted to answer this because I get this a lot. Ooh. He is looking at archiving 7 terabytes. And he was thinking about getting a series of Western Digital Red drives, those NAS drives that I like so much.
Right, the high capacity,
right,
low
high capacity, low energy. They last a long time. They've got a really good warranty, and it sounds like a great idea. Right, put that into an enclosure for USB 3.0 and FireWire 800, and he uses that to offload files from his Mac Pro.
But you have a little caveat.
Yeah, and I would say no,
no,
hell no. Hell no. Okay. They look great because you figure, if it's designed to work in a NAS, it must be really robust. And it is. It's a very robust drive. I love them in my NAS. That's the only drive I will ever put in my NAS boxes. Okay. Western Digital Red is great.
So why the hell no?
The hell no is because they were designed for NAS boxes. They do not work well as desktop drives. For one simple reason. They have TLER enabled. That's time-limited error recovery. Great for NAS boxes. What will happen in a NAS box is every once in a while, a drive will have a sector error, right? And if it was a desktop drive, it will remap that and move the data over in order to make sure that you don't corrupt the data.
Right.
But in a NAS drive, you want that TLER to be set really low because it doesn't have to remap because there's another copy of the data on one of the other drives in the array. And what the array will do is the array will just say, okay, forget that, use this and copy it over and fix it when we've got time, when we're not pushing data.
And then so what's the problem that you run into?
The problem that you run into is if you run that in the desktop and it's running TLER and it tells it not to remap a bad sector, it's the only drive in the computer
and it's gone.
And it's gone.
Okay.
You just corrupted a segment. And I've tested it. I didn't know if it was actually going to happen, so I filled up a red with a bunch of video files. Mm-hmm. And I'd say within 2 or 3 weeks, I started getting errors, like files wouldn't play, or I'd click the file name for one file and it would play a different file. It actually happens.
Not good.
Yeah, don't do it. Get a Western Digital Green. Or if you need performance, get a Western Digital Black.
And, that's what I use is a black. But is that because they have higher TLER?
Right.
Okay.
Well, it's just because if it knows it's going to be a single drive, it understands
like,
this
I need
is
to
important.
Move this.
I got to move this over.
Yeah.
Right. I'm about to lose this data. Yeah. If it's a red drive, the red drive is assuming it's running in a NAS. Now, there's people in the chat room who are saying, oh, you could just flash it. Yeah, you could flash it, but then it's not a red drive anymore, so why buy the red drive?
Right. Exactly.
It's like saying, we have a problem with the Maserati. It uses up too much gas.
Too much
you could put a Nissan engine in there. Oh, you could.
Okay. But is it not a Maserati?
Anyway. Yeah. Now, that's been a long episode of Know How. I think we're just going to call it right now.
I already call it. What, have we hit our 30-ish minute mark?
We're way over that 30-minute mark. Yeah. I know it's been a lot of information that we've been fire hosing at you. There's all the stuff from the super backup. There's the answers for the questions. There's the links for Project Lunchbox.
The Lunchbox links, yeah.
We're going to make sure that you get all those in our show notes, which are where?
At twit.tv/KH. And it's not only can you find our show notes there, but you can find all our past episodes. You can subscribe, download, you know.
Yeah.
Just basically enjoy everything about the show.
Which is important because in this episode, we were referring back to previous episodes.
Right.
104 and 5 for the RDP and for Glacier. And episode 76 for Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi analysis.
Yeah, there's always gems, nuggets, that you can pour into your know-hole.
They're in there. They're definitely in there. But you can also find us on YouTube.
YouTube.com/knowhow.
Don't email us because...
We won't.
No.
Read it.
The best way to communicate with us is either on Twitter, and I am at @cranky_hippo.
I am at @PadreSJ. That's, Padre with... And then I think people know how to spell.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think they're good. And if you want to join in the Google Plus community, we have over 7,000 people there posting projects, ideas, and answering questions that we may or may not be able to answer, but... Between us and the 7,000 people in
there,
somebody's going to figure it out. Yeah. They'll fill your knowledge hole.
And don't forget that we do the show live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific time. You can find us at live.twit.tv. And as long as you're there, go ahead and jump into our chat room at irc.twit.tv, where you can ask us questions during the show or make fun of us. That happens a lot, too.
We make fun of ourselves
Anyway. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballas here.
I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
go do it.